Go Loud.
Father Bertie Ahern, Father Mary Hannafin, Father Jim Gavin, Father Eamon O'Queeve, Father Deirdre Heenan, Father Padraig O'Cadig, Father Schaefer O'Leary, Father Peter Power, Father Colm Eastwood, Father Niall Quinn, Father Sintini Waraku, Father Todd Unctious. So Steve Van Yisseldick and sorry, listen, he can. I don't care what kind of dick he has. Steve Van Yisseldick. The fires of accountability are being set, and we will have a bonfire of accountables.
Welcome to A Few Scoops, the Irish news podcast that tries to keep you informed without depressing the life out of you. My name is Aoife Muir. I'm an author and journalist, and my co-host is the funniest man in Cork. It's
Colm O'Regan, live from Westport.
The gorgeous
where
West.
I'm recording from this week. Yeah.
The wonderful place. West. This week, we have a UN vote on Irish troops in Lebanon, the Fianna Fáil presidential candidate race, Sally Rooney and now being labelled an alleged funder of terrorism, the Irish trader starts this week, rent is going up across Ireland, water is wet and the sky is blue. And Colm has some good news for us about men who make the effort for their wives. A vote that was meant to be held by the UN to decide the future of the Lebanon peace mission was delayed on Monday. This vote was for the renewal of the United Nations interim force in Lebanon. So for most Irish people, we will know, or they will know, someone from the Defence Forces who has done a tour in Lebanon. It is a 47-year-old multinational peacekeeping effort. And we know obviously how important it is here for people and their families who are in the Defence Forces. 47 Irish troops have died on the UNIFIL peacekeeping deployments, the most recent Private Sean Rooney. Thousands more have died in invasions and civil wars. So there is now a vote on whether to keep this peacekeeping mission going. To give people some context, the people who want this mission to end are the US and Israel. And it appears that it may have a renewal because of negotiations being backed by France, who we know obviously a very important voice in the UN. Ireland obviously would like the peacekeeping mission to continue. However, the reasoning behind getting rid of it is that this was started after the Lebanon and Israeli war, and the UNIFIL troops there are basically kept there to stop what they call criminal gangs taking over Lebanon. However, because of the proliferation and power now that Hezbollah have, America very much feels that this peacekeeping mission has failed. And Israel apparently wants to move in to the south of Lebanon to set up bases in order to stop rockets being able to be fired into Israel. So there is a long, complicated history, as there is with most countries around Israel and its borders, and we'll now have to wait. So the feeling very much is, from what I have read in the last couple of days, is that they will get a renewal, but it very much appears that the US are going to say, you can have your renewal, but this is the last renewal that we're going to back.
Is this one of those situations where, to the outsider who knows nothing, you look at a few peacekeepers there in one of the most complicated places in the world and go, sure, what are they doing? They're not allowed to intervene militarily and all of that. But now more than ever, are they eyes in a place where certain large actors would rather nobody was watching? So even though it looks like it's an army that can't do much, It's probably saved civilian lives, because they are this international force who are there, and, you know, they do stuff like they provide medical aid, don't they, and dental care and sometimes humanitarian relief in a very fraught area, is that right?
Yeah, and basically they create a buffer zone between two enemy, for want of a better term, countries. Camp Shamrock is there and has been there for decades. I'm sure everyone at this stage has seen it, but if you haven't, some of the locals in Lebanon actually have Irish accents because they learned English from Irish peacekeepers there.
And it's often a peculiarly, like, a lot of Irish army are kind of Midlands direction. Yeah. There's a strong Westmeath Lebanon.
Yeah, you know the Westmeath Lebanese. But we know that, as I just said, there have been people that have been killed, and also there have been increasing attacks on the peacekeepers there. And in the draft text, the council condemned the incidents that affected United Nations peacekeeping forces in Lebanon and their premises, including injuring several peacekeepers. They did not name Israel, but that's who it was. And it very much appears that Israel, backed by America, have said that this peacekeeping force has failed because of the proliferation of Hezbollah. They're not doing enough to assist the Lebanese army in dismantling the group. And the latest conflict between Hezbollah and Israel began in earnest with an invasion by Israel in October 2024. This very much, for anyone who has a set of eyes, is Israel once again moving in over borders into other people's countries. And now this peacekeeping mission, when it's not just Irish soldiers, there's a number of different nations involved, but they are the eyes and the ears of the UN. And we know that the UN has seen a number of cuts to funding from America. Yeah. And this is something that we should be quite nervous about.
And it's also an example of, in complicated world matters, like, good things are slow, boring, bureaucratic, take time, but are valuable. And we definitely know if the UN peacekeeping wasn't there, and it has its ups and downs around mm-hmm. the world, but in its absence, things would be a lot worse.
Absolutely.
Different topic, Aoife, but this is one of those things that I hear in the news and then keep meaning to look up, but then don't. The Irish in the UN, they're there, something to do with a triple lock. So when everybody's going on about the triple lock, and I think somebody was talking about it at the Jennifer Carl McNeil at the Michael Collins Memorial. Mm-hmm. Did she mention triple lock as well? So apart from protecting your bike in Dublin, what is the triple lock?
So the triple lock describes how we decide how to send our defence forces overseas in parts of, like, peacekeeping missions. So it involves UN approval, a decision by the government, and a vote in the Dáil. That's why it's called the triple lock, because there's three different says in overseas missions. And now the Irish government has proposed new legislation that would remove that triple lock. So the new proposed legislation would remove the requirement for the UN approval when Ireland is deploying members of their defence forces outside the state. And then the Dáil resolution is not required when deploying a replacement contingent or when the contingent deployed has 50 members or less. Now, the opposition, they have all come out and said that they are totally against this, that they want to keep the triple lock. They think it's democratic, that the Dáil should have a vote on it rather than just the government having the say-so, because they believe it is the Irish people who should have the final say on it, and the Irish people vote for the people in the Dáil. And, you know, the government could argue, well, they're the government because the Irish people voted them in. But we know that's not technically the case now, because we are often, actually since the hunger strike, we have been in minority governments and coalition governments. People Before Profits TD Paul Murphy said that this would be a defining onslaught on Ireland's neutrality and that our neutrality should be defended. Meanwhile, the government, we're back in the news, defending their new legislation. Last week, Jennifer Carl McNeill, the health minister, said that the move meant that we cannot be held by others. We must remove the triple lock, take charge of our own affairs, and be held to account for our own decisions.
Wonderful words there from Jennifer Carl McNeill. A brilliant sentence. We must be held accountable for our own decisions. I applaud that, and I look forward to them holding themselves accountable for all of their decisions. And that's definitely going to happen, isn't it, Aoife?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're already seeing, you know, accountability of, you know, waiting lists for children with spinal issues, you know, mesh issues, you know, the lack of mental health beds for children, the children's hospital debacle, the housing crisis, the occupied territories bill. Yeah, we're really good at accountability.
There's an explosion in opportunities for accountability, and I don't know where they're going to start being accountable, but Jennifer Carol McNeill there has launched the starting gun on accountability holding, and it's just going to be accountability festival.
I can't wait for it. Love it. Now, far be it from me to defend the people who went to Trinity, and even worse, talk about it. But Sally Rooney is being both demonized and hailed by everyone who has a social media account. Last week, Sally Rooney wrote an op-ed in the Irish Times, which has now since gone viral. In this, Sally Rooney, the author of Normal People, Conversations with Friends, I think Sally Rooney is one of the best Irish writers around at the minute. Last week, Sally Rooney said that she would support the now prescribed organization Palestine Action. We've talked about Palestine Action before. They were prescribed as a terror group for the horrendous crime of graffiti.
Extreme graffiti, though. I mean, that was graffiti on a war plane. That's as graffiti as you can get, in fairness.
It's actually the coolest way to do graffiti when you think about it.
Paint on a plane, like that could... that could take the shine off.
Exactly. You know,
it's very specific paint goes on warplanes.
Palestine Action are now listed in the same grouping as people like Islamic State and the Loyalist Volunteer Force because of their horrendous graffiti. Around 700 people have been arrested so far in England and the North for their alleged open support of Palestine Action. Such things like holding signs and wearing T-shirts. Sally Rooney wrote in this op-ed that she supported Palestine Action and then she would continue to support Palestine Action. And she went one further, and in a very rare case of someone putting their money where their mouth is, Sally Rooney said that she would use the royalties from some of her books and the BBC adaptations of those books. So Normal People, we all know the sexual awakening that a lot of people had with Normal People, and Conversations with Friends, which I think was widely panned by critics. However, she said that she will use the profits from those and donate it to Palestine Action, which she said, if this makes me a supporter of terrorism, so be it. This caused a flurry of action, paired clutching from the British tabloid press. The Sunday Telegraph this week did surmise that she could be arrested landing into Heathrow if she was going to a book festival.
That would be a little bit slower than going into Heathrow like and not being arrested. she might clear the queues faster.
Ironically, security would be a lot quicker if you were arrested. Yeah. So 10 Downing Street have not specifically referred to Sally Rooney, but they were asked in a hypothetical and they said, yes, you know, you could be a supporter of a prescribed organisation and that would be against the law. I think what Sally Rooney has done is a very intelligent way of highlighting the absolute ridiculousness of this legislation to group Palestine Action, a group which supports the Palestinian people, raises money for charity, and engages in civil disobedience like we saw by the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association, like we saw in the Deep South in America. A lot of that is protesting, T-shirts, graffiti. It's also worth noting that they were not the first people to break into an RAF base and graffiti, but they are the first people to be labelled terrorists after it. So Sally Rooney now, I think we're going to say the most popular Irish writer of the moment. And I think it harks back to, you know, that kind of long line of Edna O'Brien, who was also pilloried for her political beliefs on the North, Neil McCafferty, the same. And I think in a world where the most powerful celebrities and authors and tastemakers have said absolutely nothing about a live stream genocide, it makes Sally Rooney's actions all the more heartening. Someone who has a lot to lose. You know, the BBC are under pressure now to remove Normal People and Conversations with Friends. Bookshops are under pressure to remove her books from the shelves. She has stuff to lose and she's willing to do it anyway. And she is a beacon of hope and a mirror to celebrities who will say they were always against this when there is no Gaza left. But I think she is a role model for all of us.
And similarly, NECAP have had to cancel 15 dates in the US. Sold out concerts in the US because of the upcoming Mochara court case visit September 26th. Like, real money. Just on Palestine Action, you mentioned 700 people arrested. Is there any sense that they are close enough to flooding the British judicial system with these arrests? Are they close to that kind of tipping point? And like, what if, I'm being frivolous, but if you held up a poster saying Palestine A.ction or auction or Palestine Action, you know, in terms of the making this ridiculous.
This is actually part of the plan. So protesters at the next mass demonstration against the ban will withhold their details from officers to force an en masse processing at police stations in an effort to make it practically impossible to arrest everyone. There is a pressure group called Defend Our Juries, and they will open sign-ups at the next demonstration to be held in London. They said that it would make the largest protest opposing the prescription of Palestine Action since it was banned in June, and over 2,500 people have already expressed interest in taking part. The largest number of mass arrests so far against Palestine Action was 532 people in one day. 212 of them.
Is it great that the British police, that it's so quiet there on the policing front, that they have so much time for this? What a utopia the UK.
Yeah, it must be great to have such little crime. They have the time now to arrest. Yeah. One of the people was a visually impaired wheelchair-bound man that they arrested at a London protest. And also there was the viral moment when a Belfast grandmother was also arrested for wearing a T-shirt that said Palestine Action.
Is it possible to be extradited from Ireland under British terrorist legislation? Like, could Sally Rooney, this is a terrorist organisation, in inverted commas, could you be extradited for doing stuff for Palestine Action here in Ireland?
No, because Palestine Action are not a prescribed organisation in Ireland. Sally Rooney is not a British citizen. She's not subject to British law. But these are the types of questions that are being thrown up. Even in the North, the PSNI are having basically an unenforceable nightmare, as RTE described it, when it comes to Palestine Action being labelled as a terrorist group in the North as well. If the PSNI was to arrest everyone who professed their support for the organisation, the justice system would be completely overwhelmed. If they do not routinely arrest or charge people for professing their support for the IRA, UVF or UDA, organisations which have each murdered hundreds of people, how proportionate is it to arrest someone for wearing a T-shirt bearing the name?
Police swoop on a singing of the fields of Athenry.
Yeah, so what Sally Rooney has done has forced these questions. Are you going to arrest a beloved author at Heathrow? Are you going to ban her from book festivals? Or is it that this legislation should never have been passed in the first place? It is part of a slow descent into authoritarianism, but what is a so-called left-wing government.
Keir Starmer must be the wettest authoritarian ever, though. I feel like he needs to put some medals on his suit or something.
Yeah, it doesn't suit him, but very little does, to be honest. Sally Rooney, for now, is free. Free Sally Rooney. But we'll wait and see. God forgive her for making me defend someone who went to Trinity, but there we are. The presidential campaign has remained pretty tepid, even though it hasn't started yet. Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil have yet to declare a candidate or even a favourite for their candidate. And the latest name in a long line of names that we've heard suggested for Fianna Fáil is Jim Gavin. For those not into the GAA or not living in Dublin, Jim Gavin is a 54-year-old man who led Dublin to 6 All-Ireland titles in Gaelic football in his 7-year reign as manager, including the historic 5 in a row. He is also a former Defence Forces officer. He has been appointed to a number of different public services roles since, and he is apparently, never heard this before in my life, apparently very popular in and around Fianna Fáil. Jim Gavin has yet to comment on anything to any newspapers, but he is a name that has been bandied around. Another name associated with a potential run for president for Fianna Fáil is Colm.
Go for it.
Bertie Ahern. Bertie Ahern, the former leader of Fianna Fáil and Taoiseach of Ireland, his name has also been bandied around. It is reported that Bertie would be quite happy to have his name in the mix for the presidential election. I personally would have thought that given the propaganda from one country singer, C-Matt, in her latest song Euro Country, in which she name checks the former Taoiseach about the travesty and the devastation that the financial crash afflicted on the Irish people, I would have thought Bertie might have stepped back a bit. But no, apparently his name is in the mix too. Do you have any thoughts? Would you like to see President Gavin or President Ahern, Colm?
The Fianna Fáil candidate search, it's beginning to take on the last time the FAI were looking for an Ireland manager, and names just kept on popping out. And it reminds me a bit of in Father Ted when Mrs. Dodd is trying to guess the name of a priest. So it's almost like Father Bertie Ahern, Father Mary Hannafin, Father Jim Gavin, Father Eamon O'Queeve, Father Deirdre Heenan, Father Padraig O'Cadig, Father Schaefer O'Leary, Father Peter Power, Father Colm Eastwood, Father Niall Quinn, Father Cynthia Waraku, Father Todd Unctious. You know, it's just, is Todd Unctious eventually going to be the final Fianna Fáil candidate for the presidential election? But, you know, I mean, there's still time. It's going to be October now,
Early
November.
The date that has been bandied around but not yet confirmed is October 23rd. And very scandalously, that's a Thursday. So there you are. It does usually take a couple of days to count all the votes for president. So maybe they're thinking that they could have them counted by the Saturday.
Have a maths sesh then on Saturday.
Free gaff in the RS.
Yeah.
So along with potential President Gavin, potential President Bertie Ahern, we also have potential President Heather Humphreys, who is one of the candidates in the mix for Fine Gael, along with Ireland South MEP Sean Kelly, along with those who have independent TD Catherine Connolly, businessman Gareth Sheridan. There was a newspaper yesterday who also called him Gavin Sheridan, which is a mistake I keep making. And independent candidate Nick Delahanty, who had those posters that said, make crime illegal again. So,
very good.
Yeah, not much to say yet. The announcements, the nominations, nothing has been done. We don't even have a date yet, but things are happening. I look forward to whatever random celebrity that we come up with next week for Fianna Fáil. Micheál Martin has not said anything yet, and he would do well to say something soon, lest people think his party don't know what the Irish people are feeling.
Yeah, a finger on the pulse. That's him.
Micheál Martin himself said he will definitely not put himself forward for the presidential election, despite a clamour from Fianna Fáil TDs who believe he would, and in quotes, walk it. A source close to the Taoiseach said there'd be no U-turn, and why would he enter the race when he is the Taoiseach? So there you are, no Micheál Martin. However, one party leader has not yet ruled themselves out of the race. Mary Lou McDonald, the leader of Sinn Féin, has not announced who will be their candidate amid mounting speculation that Mary Lou McDonald herself would enter the race. I have heard from people within Sinn Féin, very pro the idea and very against the idea, one being if she does get elected, they don't have a leader. And if she doesn't get elected, it'll be quite embarrassing. So there you are.
Would you describe what you're hearing, Aoife? Is there a clamour on both sides? Like,
no
what
clamour.
What constitutes a clamour?
Yeah,
Is it more than a murmur? I do like the idea that you need three people for a clamour. Is it, again, come back to Father Ted for to discover who's been stealing the sheep? Like, does it kind of say, is that a clamour?
Mary Lou McDonald.
Yeah.
Colm, have you ever watched The Traitors?
Yes, I have watched it. I really liked it, actually. I like the worst impulses in people, and then they're all friends at the end.
Yeah, so for those who haven't watched it, The Traitors was originally a BBC game show, but it is now coming to RTE1, and The Traitors Ireland is beginning with their host, National Treasure, one of my favorite people on earth. Not my favorite Cork person, because my favorite Cork person is right here, but Siobhan McSweeney.
Don't leave yourself any hostages to fortune. I just pick Siobhan. It's fine. Just because I'm right here, just yeah. Pick her.
Siobhan McSweeney. Love her to death, Sister Michael from Derry Girls. Do you know she is so beloved that now the local newspaper in Derry reports on Siobhan McSweeney's career changes as if she is a Derry person? Love it.
She's the Jack Charlton of Derry.
Exactly. The Irish season will take place in Slane Castle, and what happens is a number of contestants will all be taken to this so-called secret location. Some of them will be decked out at the start as traitors. You cannot tell anyone if you're a faithful or a traitor. And then the traitors must work together to get to the end of the show where they win €50,000. However, cliques start, loyalties are tested, Machiavellian behaviour takes hold, and they all have to live and work together while competing these challenges, and then they vote each other out. And the part of the faithfuls is to find the traitors and vote them all out until it's only faithfuls left at the end. It is fantastic.
I love it. During the day, like, the traitoriness is only happening in the evening. During the day, they have to do a kind of an Ireland's Fittest Families activity. But in Ireland's Fittest Families, like, when a mother, you know, lets the family down by not being able to get over a wall, like, there's hugs, and then there's, like, brooding resentment, like, fuck's sake, ma, you know. But in the end, that's kind of it. But in the traitors, they can just, that the mom could be murdered or banished. It's great. The only thing is, like, with any of these things, and you kind of see it with first dates as well too, the size of Ireland means that the chances that the people in the castle don't know each other is very slim. Don't know each other already. There will be some connection. And I wonder, will that influence people's preconceptions? Because if you know somebody, or as we say here in Ireland, you know who they might be, and you know who their people are, and basically you're looking at somebody judging whether they're a traitor or not based on what their father was like, or, you know, or maybe like years ago during the Land League, they got that lovely south-facing field. You know, it goes back generations. They took the soup. There'll be somebody there who took the soup just won't be trusted.
As my ma would say about someone, like, she gets that from her father's side of the family.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They didn't get it from my side.
Watch them with a bag of ice.
And then the flip side of that is you think somebody's sound because, I don't know, they're a fellow with a hitch on their car, or they give you a lift one time.
A good GAA man.
On the way back from Electric Picnic. Somebody's big in the tidy towns and they're the ones to watch.
Yeah.
Somebody who is, like, you know, watering hanging baskets on the Thursday is the one who will insert the knife between your shoulder blades on the Saturday, the first Saturday of the traitors. That's the thing. Preconceptions. You got to drop them all.
Exactly.
When you go in there.
In the last BBC series, a girl put on a Welsh accent because she read somewhere that people were more trusting of people with Welsh accents, and she got to the final. Like,
oh, really?
And she kept it up the entire time. Yeah. So we could have someone putting on like a Donegal's a very friendly accent, a very slow moving, a wee Daniel O'Donnell lilt.
Well, I always found that Donegal accent was always good for encouraging people to choose a particular university. You see the ads. You know, I'm always fascinated by the accents they use in voiceovers. You know, working class Dublin accent is a mechanic or a thief. Cork accent, tight with money. The soft northern accent is, come to Technical University of Dublin, where you're... I don't even know whether that's not a Donegal accent, sorry.
It wasn't bad.
Sure, you don't know what might happen here, you know.
And then in my accent, saying to somebody, sure, you don't know what would happen there, is a very different message.
Could be war. Sorry, that was uncalled for.
Partitionist is what that was. Okay, so the Traitors Ireland begins on RT1 on Sunday, the 31st of August. I will miss it, and Kyle will miss it, because we'll be the EP, but I'm going to keep it as hangover. I'm going to record it and then watch it when we hangover on Monday.
Will there be people at Electric Picnic watching the Traitors in the campsite? I guarantee 1,000 people will see both EP and Traitors first episode, at least. You know, the people who never leave the campsite at Electric Picnic?
Yeah.
Because they were too comfortable.
Yeah.
They'll be watching the Traitors. They're absolute loose cannons then on Monday morning because they will have the spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Reject those people. Get them out of your life.
I'm sure we might have to do like a spin-off second episode every week where we discuss the traitors. Anyway, so yeah, Sunday night, we will keep up with it.
Irish presidential election campaign, that should be done traitor style. we're close enough to having the numbers now.
Yeah, and if we, I mean, realistically, if we're going with what it takes to win the traitors, Bertie would want it.
Or others, or anybody.
He's a sly dog. You know, he has that wheeler-dealer energy.
If Siobhan McSweeney was hosting a traitor-style presidential election campaign, the line between this role and her role as the nun in Derry Girls would be even more blurred. It'd just be her rolling her eyes for 13 episodes and saying gobshites at people.
Totally. Okay, so this isn't even, I suppose it's bad news, but it's something we've come to expect in Ireland, and something that I will openly admit I have a conflict of interest here, is I am a renter and this pisses me off no end. So a new report has found that average rent in Ireland is almost 7% higher than the same time last year. Average rents rose by 1.6% in the second quarter of the year. This is all in the latest report by the website daft.ie. I think all of us can relate to the slow, depressed scroll through daft.ie. So 7% means the average open market rent nationwide between April and June, oh my God, was €2,055 per month, up from a low of €765 in 2011 and 51% higher than before the outbreak of COVID-19.
And like, it's important to remember, percent is cumulative, like, so it goes up.
Yep.
And then the next percentage is on top of that. And it doesn't take long at that rate for rents to double.
So
for people,
Ronan Lyons, who wrote the report from Trinity College, he said the upward march of rent continues and shows and shows little sign of improving. As has been the case for almost 15 years, the solution to a deficit of rental housing is ensuring more rental housing gets built. According to the report, there were 2,300 homes available to rent on the 1st of August in a country of how many million people?
Five.
This is down 14% year on year, close to half of the 2015 to 2029 average for available homes to rent. Now, add to that, the volume of new housing is slowing considerably in the capital, Dublin, and inflation at the capital is now 6.5%. It is now close to the average seen in the rest of the country at 7.3%. Limerick City saw the highest inflation of 14.9%. Lord above. Galway rents are up 8.5% on the same year, and Cork City increased by nearly 12%. Inflation was even greater in Waterford, where it was up 12.5%. So far be it from us Dublin dwellers taking all the credit, getting all the headlines. It is actually even our more rural cities out in the west, they are also having a complete nightmare.
In fairness, we have decentralised, you know, a lot of talk about extra growth in Dublin. We have successfully decentralised a rental crisis.
Yeah.
So that's good, isn't it?
And they say the government can't do anything. Listen, I know we're being facetious about this, but I find it incredibly tough for students, for parents. I live in what would be considered a low socioeconomic area. I have no issue saying I pay €1,000 in rent for a room every month. And the people who come from my area, I have social housing on either side. And if they were brought up, a lot of people that are brought up in those flats with their parents and then go out to work and have children of their own can't afford to live in the area they're from. And that's not fair, because places in the inner city are being gentrified and new houses are being built and social housing is being pushed out and bought over by vulture funds. And then the people who are actually from these places can't afford to live there. And the answer to all this is that we need to build more rental accommodation. We need to build more social housing. And we know that all the targets that were placed this year are going to be missed. But like Jennifer Carol McNeill said, accountability is coming. So mark it down, lads. She said it. The accountability is coming.
The fires of accountability are being set And we will have a bonfire of accountables. And then we'll forget. And then we'll forget what we're supposed to be accountable for. That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah, because then the fight starts about where the bonfire should be. We know this. I could tell you all about it. Okay, Colm, give us some good news.
I like to sprinkle a little bit of different types of good news. So this is a little one. This is a little personal good news. A man found his wife's lost wedding rings after searching through landfill. Greater love
Gairns.
Can a man have for his wife. Canadian man dug through piles of rubbish, according to the BBC, at his local dump in a valiant, romantic and ultimately successful, which is, I think, success is very romantic, I have to say. Valiant, romantic and successful effort to find his wife's accidentally discarded wedding rings. So Steve Van Yseldijk and... Sorry, I think... Listen, he can... I don't care what kind of... I don't care what kind of dick he has. Steve Van Yseldijk and... His wife of 26 years, Janine, they brought him a bag of popcorn from the cinema, which that's the wrong direction for popcorn. You bring popcorn to the cinema.
To the cinema, yeah.
And they spilled it in their garden. No, I don't think that was a ceremony. I think they just dropped it.
Okay.
But while gathering up the buttery mess, Mrs. Van Yseldijk's rings... It could be Yseldijk. It could be Yseldijk.
That's
Mrs. Van Yseldijk's rings seemingly... They fell into the popcorn. That's butter for you. I really don't know. Like, is this one of those things where it's a contrived plot for an adult film? Anyway, yeah. The rings fell into the popcorn bag, which was then thrown into a compost bin. And they only realized the rings were missing after the compost had been collected. Mm. He went to the dump, searched through tons of waste. He found them. Like, I didn't intend for this to be innuendo laden, but he found them because he recognized... sausages that they'd also thrown out at the same time. So this is, and it's a beautiful, if ever a story
Gairns.
Could be wrapped in compost and a buttery mess involving the Yseldijks and their rings, this is one that's worth celebrating.
You know, as a woman who has been in the trenches of singledom, let me tell you, we all know the phrase, if he wanted to, he would. And let Mr. Van Hinseldink's actions show ye.
Yeah.
That if he wanted to, he would. If he wanted to make the effort, he would. Men, why are you not going to the dump to avenge your woman's lost ring?
Get you a man who looks at you the way Mr. Van Yseldijk looked at his wife's
discarded sausages.
Discarded buttery rings. Yeah.
That's class. I'd say there is going to be nary a dishwasher emptied in that house for years, because any time she asks him to do something, he's going to be like, well, didn't I go to the dump and get your ring? Didn't I fight the discarded sausages?
Exactly. And I mean, the flip side of that is the absolute terror you experience at the dump, where you've just had the joy of throwing a broken Hoover off a cliff into the bulky waste skip. And then you pat your pockets for your car keys. Have you travelled to civic communities much, Aoife?
No, but do you know what I often do? When I put a wash on, I immediately tap my pockets to look for my phone. And if I can't find my phone, I immediately think I've put it in the washing machine.
Yeah.
It's not something I've ever done in my life, but it is a constant fear that I will. So I'd say it's the same kind of thing.
The race to catastrophe. Yeah, absolutely. Just as that moment where you go, have I thrown my car keys into the paper compactor. And then the joy when you find them again.
Yeah,
you
know, that's a little good
news.
Little
things.
So good news. Do you have more good news for us?
One good news in the kind of scientists say category. So two of them, right?
Great.
There are scientists trying to turn, you know, hay fever and pollen
I know it
evil. Well, there are scientists who hope to turn pollen into paper. They're working on the molecules behind pollen that might be able to make paper and sponges and much more. These are scientists in Singapore. So they've got some success, as ever with these studies, caveats, scaling it up and all of that. But isn't it nice to know that when you're suffering with hay fever, there are scientists trying to turn those swords into plowshares and turn pollen into paper. And also, this is a good one. So other studies indicating if you are hard of hearing, mm-hmm. but have resisted a hearing aid, this is something to possibly consider. A hearing aid before the age of 70 can dramatically reduce the risk of dementia.
No way!
According to new research. So the idea is basically that age-related hearing loss can be a risk factor in developing dementia in terms of this, like the social isolation associated with hearing loss. So you kind of shut yourself away, but also the literal brain effort in straining to hear people. So the American Academy of Audiology warns untreated hearing loss can be connected to cognitive decline. So the converse of that, again, correlation, causation, but potential good news. And if you are resisting the hearing aid, consider this, that maybe it is good, not just now, but also in future. I'm not a doctor. I have no qualifications in reading complex research, but do look that up.
That's so interesting.
Published in the JAMA Neurology. Let's see this research letter. I'll click it here. The self-reported hearing aid use and risk of incident dementia. Okay, they've gone into science. they've already shaken me off their trail. Yeah. But anyway, looking forward to hearing more about that. So possible good news, hearing aids and dementia.
And yet we are always on the hunt for good news to send you away with a spring in your step. So we want to hear your good news. You could send it to me or Colm on Instagram, or you can send it to afewscoops@goloudnow.com. No story too big or too small. This week we have one listener said, my sister's trip to London coincided nicely with me buying my drink for EP, meaning I was able to get duty-free vodka for half the price. Is this the only perk of Brexit? Question mark. Yes, I actually do love flying from London to Dublin now because you can get gin for like basically nothing. Well done,
always
Brexit.
Speak responsibly. We say that as well, don't we?
Next one said, hi, Eva and Colm. My good news story is that when I was walking to work this week, I stopped at a bench to get my umbrella out of my bag and walked off without realizing that I left my phone on the bench. I was so lucky that a fella who was on a walk on his lunch break seen it and picked it up and reunited me with it. I'm so grateful for that man because it meant I didn't have to use my tax return on a new phone, and my mommy would have killed me for being so stupid.
Now, he didn't dive into a bin, a compost landfill to retrieve it for her, but still, he's a keeper.
It's easily done. The night of All Together Now, when I returned back to my car to sleep in the boot, I had my phone out because I had the torch on looking for said car. Next morning, could not find the phone anywhere, was ringing the phone, could hear the phone ringing, couldn't work it out. I had perched the phone on top of the roof of my car and left it there overnight. Thankfully, it didn't rain. So well done to that good Samaritan. Happy for our listeners. And with that, me and Colm have more good news. Colm and I will be performing a live show of A Few Scoops at Electric Picnic in Stradbally this weekend. We are on Saturday at 4 p.m. We have a live show guest, the same as we did for All Together Now. It is the hilarious comedian Fiona Frawley. So myself, Colm and Fiona will be going through the news of the week, and then we will have a number of games to play with the audience. We had such a ball at All Together Now for our first live show, and we were very nervous. So we are feeling a little more confident this time, Colm.
But not complacent. Complacency is our biggest enemy.
Exactly.
We need to bring that intensity. Let's follow Jim Gavin's example and just high performance environment all the way through. We'll all be wearing wearable technology to track our heartbeats. Let's rock it, Aoife.
Let's rock it, Colm.
So or let's nudge it gently. Let's nudge it gently. Let's
4 o'clock on Saturday at the Here stage, part of Minefield at Electric Picnic. So we really hope to see yous all there. Once again, thank you to our lovely producer, Siobhan Walsh, who puts up with us every week. And thank you, our listeners. That has been A Few Scoops, Colm.
Yeah, thanks. Goodbye from Westport, where I'm recording this and about to get kicked out of my Airbnb. So, gotta go.
Thank you.